It felt like in the movie The Matrix when Neo uploaded how to do jujitsu or whatever that was. It's like V13 was like, oh, I know how to do this now.
We go from what the hell to, hey, we're probably going to have driverless rides starting next year in some places. There will be millions of cars on the road that will drive themselves.
Do you remember the first time you downloaded the Uber app? You're like, oh, wait, there's a new way of doing this now. And oh, it'll come get me. And you were probably a very small group that even knew Uber existed. When people call me and say, should I get a Tesla? I try to explain it to them. It's about the software, not the EV or the brand.
Okay, so for those that are not familiar, Chuck is a world famous, a world famous beta tester of Tesla's full self-driving capabilities, software. So much so that he has an entire update named after him, the world famous Chuck Cook Left Turn, okay? But we've come a long way since those days, and now we're on a brand new a branch of the self-driving experience with version 13, which dropped a couple days ago. We had JD from AI Driver on the channel, another beta tester that does incredible work on YouTube, just like Chuck does. So now we're sitting down with Chuck to get his thoughts on the latest version, what he's seeing through his locality. JD is from California, Chuck is in Florida, and we have a lot to talk about. So Chuckster, what is going on with V13? Tell us your experience.
Thanks for having me back on, guys. It's been a little bit like we were talking about beforehand, but you guys always keep a good conversation going, keep it intriguing, and you balance each other out well. So just want to shout out to both of you guys.
Thank you.
The work you're doing here. V13, yeah, you know, God, when Elon stopped tweeting dates and he started letting the Tesla AI team put out those end of the month updates, and then the first one kind of came through, we started to kind of get this, okay, wait a minute. These are Ashok's timelines now, not Elon's timelines. We can actually bank on this, right? So that created this hype for V13 that was just insurmountable. And that one little word, nobody heard or read that said around Thanksgiving, right? You know, just Thanksgiving, by Thanksgiving wide is what everyone heard, which is what they wanted to hear. And then Thanksgiving kind of came and went, and like, oh, okay, around Thanksgiving is what it actually said. And I think we're losing hope of going wide, which is another interpretable point, right? You know, obviously the only people I know that have this, and there probably are others publicly, Omar, myself, and JD, and Chris, Dirty Tesla. So there's four of us that I know, and maybe you guys know a handful of others, but it feels very narrow, which is a point of confusion. Maybe you guys can bring us back around to that later too, around that. But it came kind of on Black Friday, I believe it was, or something like Saturday, something right around in there. So it was that weekend that everybody was home. And, you know, I like huge technology events that come out around Thanksgiving because, you know, remember when Bitcoin came out around Thanksgiving night? It didn't come out, but it just skyrocketed around Thanksgiving like that one year. And it's just like families get together and you start to get to tell your stories. And I started seeing some tweets about, you know, hey, we got a Tesla guy coming to Thanksgiving dinner. Be careful. You know, he's going to talk all night about that kind of a thing. And I do think it generates energy like that around whatever your scenario is, family coming home, you're talking to your uncles or aunts or cousins or sisters or family or grandparents. I think there's a huge story to tell with Tesla, especially just with the zeitgeist going on right now and where Elon fits into everything and how the AI and the robots fit and this EV politicization. And, you know, people have stopped saying that Cybertruck's ugly to, you know, how do you like that thing? And it's kind of shifted. So I just wanted to say all that around Thanksgiving, I think is a huge thing. And when it did drop, and it dropped at 6 p.m., which was another uncharacteristic time frame, 6 p.m. Eastern. So that would have been like 3 p.m. Pacific.
Yeah.
Normally these drops on a time scale that they hit in the middle of the night while I'm asleep around 3 a.m. and around midnight. And you get Omar out jumping in his car around midnight. But Omar and I believe it was his dad, you have to do a daytime drive when it dropped. So kudos to the AI team or whoever was doing those last checks and checklists to get through QA to push it out to the VIN numbers they wanted to, because they obviously had a Thanksgiving weekend where they were working pretty hard.
Yeah.
So then it dropped, and then I went out and drove it right away. It was an evening twilight to sunset drive for me, which I don't do a lot of, but I'm like, listen, it's nowhere near, you know, bedtime. It's just dark out, so let's go do one. And it did amazingly well. I don't want to call the first drive the best drive because they've continually gotten better, but I'm going to use this term probably a couple times to describe it. It felt like in the movie The Matrix, when Neo uploaded how to do jujitsu or whatever that was, it was just like, oh, I know jujitsu. It's like V13 was like, oh, I know how to do this now. And that, you know, you talk to JD already, so you already heard his enthusiasm, and you probably watched Chris's and my videos and understand our enthusiasm. We're out there just driving it like we did the first one. It just feels different. Now, that does get hyperbolic, and you kind of say, well, you always say that, and I don't think V13 is as big a leap from V12 as V12 was from V11. The end-to-end neural network on V12 just solved things. I mean, weird things that just went away. Blinkers finally got better. Narrow roads kind of knew how to handle itself and things like that. But V13, I'm like, no, it's just driving better, smoother, that sort of a thing. But it did learn two new tricks with you driving reverse and park and unpark, and the speed profiles went all the way down to low speeds, which was a huge improvement too. So my overall impression of V13, just to round out your first question, is it is a huge accomplishment for the team. I do believe they are approaching feature complete for an attempt to go unsupervised. I'm sure we'll talk about that later. Yeah. And I think it is an amazing accomplishment for the team that did this in a rewrite with a new data set, with new cameras, with expanding everything, and didn't have any regressions that I've seen. So usually right out of the gate, there's a 0.1, 0.2, 0.3. Okay, now we can go wide. I don't know why it hadn't gone wide yet.
Yeah. So I think what's been very interesting talking to you and also talking to JD is that you're both very, very neutral, unbiased representations of how the system actually performs, and you show it in your videos. Y'all don't hide anything. Y'all are critical. I would almost say you're overly critical on purpose, because you're really trying to highlight the safety implications of something going wrong, right? Yeah. And I think that's how this should be done. But now this is the second person that I've spoken to that appears to be very positive about this current shit. I'm not saying it's like make it go live on Supervised today, right? But, you know, one of the things I heard was, you know, you're afraid to almost sound hyperbolic, or like it's like you don't want to really put something out there that makes it seem better than it actually is. But so let me ask you this question. Are you surprised that we are at this point now, or do you think, or is this expected? Was this an expected step based on your mental framework you had for the improvement cadence for the software?
No, I don't think I'm surprised. With the exception of really having to understand or try to guess what the team had to do to make this migration to this branch, to a new data set, to training on Cortex, to having the 5-megapixel cameras do their own work. I can't appreciate how much effort that either was or wasn't. And maybe with not being compute constrained, it's a lot easier. And Ashok's been like, oh yeah, we can train all we want now. That sort of thing. And it gets easier in some ways. We knew reverse was coming. We knew that, you know, these sort of behaviors needed to, the functions, I'll call them, needed to come so that we were going to approach feature complete for what hopefully will be unsupervised in 2025. But I wasn't surprised. And almost if I were to look back in time, I'm like, I'm not sure why this is V13 other than AI4 only, right? The functionality to me, this could have been 12.5.7, right? Okay, we added reverse, we added this, but the fact that they forked it now, and this is AI4 data only, that expanded data set, and they're going to go towards more parameters, that makes sense why it's V13. So it's more about this data set and optimizing for this hardware versus maybe the features that they added in this build.
Yeah. So for the audience, have you experienced any safety critical disengagements yet with V13 since you put it in your car?
I had one, and it was on film yesterday. It was at low speed, so it wasn't unsafe for me. But direct sunlight on the forward-facing cameras, it gave me the red hands and said, must take over, with that blinding low sun angle at sunrise kind of a thing. You know, had that been on the highway, I'd have had to take over right away, right? Because it actually just turns the hazards on and pulls over in that mode. So it actually it was done. It just happened to be at low speed without any other traffic. So that just raises another question. You know, a lot of people started saying, hey, do we still have this sun issue? Is this an early build? I don't know the answer to that, right? You know, obviously digitization and managing of photons in, there's probably a lot they can do. But in that situation, it did shut down at the very beginning of the drive, and the rest of the drive was flawless. So it was just, that's the way it started. I haven't had any, what I would call my unprotected left-hand turn video. I did like 10 of them, and they were all safe. They were all fine. The decision-making was fine. There is a new behavior that JD and I were talking about on the phone last night that was interesting, that adds to this additional safety. So imagine, you know, me at my unprotected left-hand turn, I'm looking for traffic from the left, I'm looking at traffic from the right, and I'm trying to decide. And then a car, you know, pulls out in the median in front of me, and they're doing either a U-turn or turning in front of me. So now I no longer have the right-of-way. Ego no longer creeps while there's a car that it has to yield to. It just stayed back at the NHTSA stop line and said, it's not my turn. And then once that car did its U-turn, then it began its creep. And I started thinking about that. And so did JD. He's like, you know, if you implement this when you're at an intersection and you're trying to get across, but somebody else has the right of way, it sort of stopped asserting itself when there was someone else that had the right of way. After they cleared, it approached and then started doing its thing. And I think that was in a pretty important change, because what can change if you go too far in an intersection and then the red light turns red and now you're, oh, I got to run the red light to get out of the intersection, or you creep out too far and then the situation changes where now you need to reverse. It sort of avoids all of that by just waiting until it's turned to go forward. So that was a subtle change. It took a little bit of thinking to see it happening. But I think all of these types of improvements are adding to its overall safety to lower the safety critical disengagements. I do believe the numbers they put out about 4 to 5 times fewer disengagements. I think that is about right. I've described this to you guys before in the podcast, but I'll talk about it again. I still believe there's this bell curve of a drive. The beginning of the drive, the end of the drive are these low asymptotes down at the bottom. And the middle of the drive has got this nice peak. It does really, really, really good in the middle of the drive. And I think it's even getting better. We still got to get onto the road and off the road safely. And even JD in his video pointed out, and I've pointed out, that that's still an upcoming feature, right? Moving a pin or somehow pulling into a driveway or parking space. We're not quite there yet. A lot of times, you know, like if I'm in my driveway, FSD is not available. So I kind of got to get it out there to where it says, okay, now you can do it. So we got some work to do there on the ends, but that's low speed again. So I don't worry about them being able to solve that. That's low speed type of scenarios. My biggest concern, and I think Omar and Chris and JD agree with me on this, is high speed cross traffic. It's still its biggest challenge. Not that it can't do it, but you know, if you got 50 miles an hour, but you got a motorcycle that's on a straightaway and he's doing 85, you know, if you got high speed cross traffic coming at you 90 degrees, you know, the closure rate there is very, very high. So it either has to just be patient and wait and say, I'm not even going to try unless I know it's clear, or it has to really, really understand the vectors of the traffic that it's approaching it. And maybe these 5-megapixel cameras that we're getting our first glimpse into have that additional acuity, because it can basically see 5 times more pixels. And I think pixels equals range when you're using photons for all of the stuff they're doing.
Yeah. So that's super helpful to walk through. I think what's very interesting to hear, Hans and I are both stuck in our ancient hardware 3 cars. So we're waiting for, you know, hopefully either V13 to work or that free upgrade that Elon was talking about for the hardware. So we'll get it at some point. I think what's interesting to hear you, Chris, Omar, JD talk about, which is a theme, and I love to hear your thoughts on this. It seems like V13, one of the big improvements it's had, it's really dramatically opening up its ability to understand context in the road and understanding second, third, fourth order, like not effects, but really digging deep into like, okay, what are the things that are happening and where do I fall within the context of the things that are happening? Kind of like memory of sort, or like some sort of like a logic to understand where it falls within all the movements around it, which I think is one of the, in my opinion, it seems to be one of the defining factors of it being called an artificial intelligence. It's actually acting in an intelligent manner, it seems. Would you say that's a fair characterization of, actually, Hans, go ahead and then we'll throw it.
Yeah, I was just going to say the way that we talked about that with JD was really the medium to long range planning, that really thinking about not only what's the move that I'm going to make in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 seconds, but what am I going to do 10 seconds from now? What am I going to do 15 seconds from now? And then factoring in those long range scenarios into the way that you're driving now.
Yeah. Yeah. I the way I would characterize that is, and oh, by the way, let me start with the upcoming features of a larger context windows, larger model, and more parameters still haven't even arrived yet. So V13 having that context you're speaking about is just basically probably the compute and the lower latency of the AI4 computer being leveraged in this model by itself versus being handcuffed to the hardware 3 parameters so that they could both run on the same branch. So I think we're seeing that speed happen. And I don't know if you guys remember this presentation on AI Day. I'll just say it was 2, or maybe it was another presentation they made, but it was a graphical description of when they were starting to talk about going to park, and it was a Monte Carlo type run solution where it showed all of these possible outcomes of how it could go there. And if you understand how the Monte Carlo works, it kind of branches. If you think about that graphic and then think about what you just said about possible outcomes and solutions, I really do feel it's doing that underneath that visualization in that model to go, well, I could go there, I could go there, I could go here, here, and here with what I see. I do think that these probabilities of outcomes or possible trajectories are being, there's more of them now being evaluated on the AI4 computer. So in that one clip JD had that I thought was a good example of the point you just made about how it was a turn that had to cross 3 lanes of traffic to get to the red light to then go, that he was so blown away by. I had a few clips similar to that too, but since your viewers just recently watched that, to me, it was able to pick the highest probability outcome quicker rather than see one and then a half a second go by and go, oh, well, it's too late to do that now. So many times before, I felt like it saw the right thing, but its hesitancy to commit just used up the time that it had to execute. And without fail, I felt V13, you know, sometimes, you know, it'll go to creep and then just completely roll. And I'm like, wow, it decided to do that quickly. I've thought that to myself several times.
Yeah. Hans, I don't want to, I can take Chuck for myself for the next 2 hours. So I want to make sure I bring you in here.
I guess one of the areas where I frequently find myself having to disengage that I haven't heard anyone talk about yet, so I just want to ask you while I've got you, is around school zones that mine will almost never recognize a school zone properly and then slow down to the correct speed when the school zone is active. Is that an issue that you encounter in your drives? And if so, have you seen any change from version 12 to version 13 and how it handles that?
Yeah, I haven't seen it change behavior yet. Very similar to how Chris Sturdy Tesla had some very good documented no turn on reds that it just ignored them. To me, this is a challenge. And I don't know if the team is going to solve it by trying to read and understand signs, which we currently do not do. Or depend on the map data layer being good enough to know what, you know, the posted time, school time zones in a location based on GPS positioning. Today, I feel where it's got it right. And sometimes I have seen it do it right on version 12. I'm confident it's a well-mapped school zone with times, start and end times that are in the map data layer. It has faked me out a couple times where it responded to a flashing yellow light. But I'm like, oh, well, the light was just flashing because it is a school zone. So it was responding by slowing to the flashing yellow more than it was the time of day kind of thing. So I do think the challenge, and this is something that we don't know yet, are they going to approach reading signs? Or because, you know, today we're just doing inference, right? You know, that is a 50-mile-an-hour sign. That is a 40-mile-an-hour sign. They're not reading 4-0, putting the numbers together and go, oh, that's 40, we're going to speed. So it's just visually recognizing the signs. I guess they could do that with no turn on red, but there's so many different versions of no turn on red. But you know what? There's so many different versions of many signs too, you know, detour and some other things that we have started to see them actually somewhat respond to, closed roads and things like that. So I'm going to say, I don't think it's responding to signs that it has to read, but if your map layer has the zones, I think it is going to respond appropriately. I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you think we need to get to reading? I personally do think we eventually do, but I don't know that that is a minimum critical requirement to go unsupervised necessarily.
You want to go first, Hans?
Yeah, well, I'm thinking about that because one of the things that I frequently find problematic with FSD, at least in my driving environments is that it just doesn't know what the speed limit is. And so it's trying to go too fast in lower speed limit areas, or it's not going fast enough in higher speed limit areas. And, you know, if you're driving in an urban environment where the map data is just way better, it's probably something that you never encounter. But like, I drove 5.5 hours across East Texas, not a single mile of which was on an interstate. And so going down more rural highways in and out of little towns where you can have a 75 mile an hour speed limit, literally 1 mile away from a 35 mile an hour speed limit. Those types of transitions, it really was struggling with, because it's not, like you're saying, it's not reading those stop or those speed limit signs and then modifying the behavior accordingly. It's just like, I think the speed limit is this. And I don't even feel like I have a good sense for how the system actually deals with when it sees the speed limit sign, because sometimes there are areas where it will think that it's one speed limit, then it will pass the sign and it'll be like, oh, the speed limit did change, and then it will change, and then other times it passes the sign and it doesn't. And so I don't even really feel like I have an understanding of how FSD is currently handling reading speed limit signs and changing its...
I think it uses map data in absence of visual, and then the visual isn't 100%, meaning like the inference of those signs isn't 100%, which, to your point about how I did, why didn't it see it? It doesn't always see it. You know, sometimes it can be occluded, or sometimes it just is a weird angle, sometimes on the highway. I do think that it defaults to the map data, though, until overridden by something visual that it is able to infer the actual speed limit from. I do want to say that in V12563 on the highway, the speed profiles did introduce much, much better speed behavior. And that one, version 13.2, speed profiles go all the way down to very low speeds. And the speed behavior that you're experiencing gets much, much better. Not to say that but it's not necessarily completely logical either. Like, I can go to chill mode, but it's still completely happy going 10 over. So, but you have control to slow it down. But in hurry mode, there's no doubt about it, it understands hurry logic. Get in the left lane, go around everyone you can, and try to get as close to the max as you can. So the speed profiles are going to be a huge improvement, and that will come to Hardware 3. I'm confident of that capability, just because it's a logic that they're implementing. Yeah. But there's a little bit of a bug, as I think you and JD talked about yesterday, with those speed profiles and the reversing maneuver that we're all starting to recognize. You know, V13 will not reverse when one of those profiles is showing, and these profiles are showing and not showing at low speeds in random weird times that I haven't been able to put my finger on when they go away and when they show up. But it is an interesting little nuance of an early version that I'm sure is a bug. I don't think that was the way it was intended to work, but a good job on JD to notice that reverse wasn't working in that mode, which kind of ties it to a stack, right? Oh, this is that stack because it can reverse. And the speed profile came from 12.563. We just lowered the speed.
Yeah. So, speaking about JD, so our conversation yesterday or 2 days ago, was it? Hans, 2 days ago? I think all three of us, meaning me, Hans, and JD, kind of where we landed, it seems, is that we're all pretty confident, and I would love to hear your take on this. We're all pretty confident that Tesla is on a path to provide a unsupervised robotaxi ride by the end of next year, given some of the recent developments and improvements that they've been experiencing going from 11 to 12 to 13. Where's your head at? How are you thinking about Tesla and Robotaxi?
Yeah, so I agree with you guys, but I still haven't changed my stance on where I think we are on the hardware. And if you guys remember my stance, I'm sticking to it only because I'm still
more cameras.
In it, but you know, my stance is I don't think a Hardware 3 and Hardware 4 are going to go unsupervised in an unconstrained operational design domain in ODD. But what you just mentioned is a constrained operational design domain, which is right now we're thinking Palo Alto or Austin or maybe some of these other cities that are like, yeah, come on in. You know, Waymo just today announced, hey, they're going to start launching in Miami. These are constrained domains that they can spend the time to make sure they're right. And in these constrained domains, they could make sure we don't go through any school zones because we don't know how to do that yet. Or they can make sure we stop at every right on red because they're constraining it. With those constraints, this hardware can go unsupervised in 2025. I'm confident of that. Matter of fact, if they've already got the app, there have been many drives that I've said I didn't need to be here, except for to maybe back it out of the driveway that I don't know how to do yet, and maybe pull it over to the most polite location versus where it chose to stop in the middle of the road or next to another car. Several drives like that on this in this build. And as you know, I can be pretty critical, but there were some times I'm just like, nope. Even in the things it didn't do the way I wanted, it was completely safe and would have just gotten you there. So if they're going to deploy that app, like they said, they're already testing and they're doing it in a specific area and they identify the problem spots, yeah, this hardware can do it. And I believe hardware 3 can probably do it too, as long as you understand the constraints you need to apply to that vehicle and that domain. I don't think we're ready to just say anywhere, anytime in the US, Canada, or wherever they've deployed this software by the time they do that, just because the world is a big place. And not that the car can't do it, it's just regulatorily, I don't know that anyone's going to take that risk. Now, this introduces a topic that I did want to tease with you guys that I haven't talked a lot about publicly yet. Now that we're to this point where we can start to see the possibility of doing a constrained robotaxi test, let's start talking and driving this software about the things that we see that can be mitigated and how. Do we need teleoperators as a backup? Well, you know what? The way, you know, JD's car was doing that 10-point turn out of the end of that dead end, you know, that is already better than the Waymos that were getting stuck in San Francisco in the cul-de-sac, right? It's already better in that scenario. But are there other scenarios that are like, you know, we'll get approved faster if we do this teleoperator control thing? You know, just like they're doing with Optimus. You know, we're all seeing it's doing amazing things. Oh, but it's teleoperated. It's still amazing they're doing them. But there's just a little backup in there to make it to work better. Other things like the constraints. Do we need to go around school zones for now because we haven't spent the time and effort to train on school zones and timing? Is the map data layer always going to be problematic and we just need to work around that because no matter what we do, the map data is a crutch that we are stuck with until we solve it with maybe the fleet talking to each other, right? So we got this first new note about the fleet talking about road close signs to each other. If that goes to potholes, if that goes to school zones, if that goes to customer feedback, if that goes to all these other things, their Waze-style data layer of self-reported crowdsourcing information could be the way they get around poor map data. So I think we need to start driving the software, the testers that have it, and anyone else that gets it, with the mindset of how can Tesla solve this, you know, in a mitigation so that we can get there faster.
Yeah,
I think it's an interesting conversation because there's a lot of things they can do.
I love that so much. First of all, how exciting is it that we're at that point? Right?
It's awesome.
Isn't it crazy? I mean, yeah. if you think back to the first time you started creating your YouTube videos 3 years ago, 4 years ago, Chuck?
Or early or late 2020, right when it came out in the winter of 2020.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So yeah, so four years almost on the dot, right? We go from what the hell to hey, we're probably going to have driverless rides starting next year in some places, right? Anyway, so I'm geeking about that and just that trajectory. As painful as it has been, at the same time, it's kind of mind-blowing where we are today.
Because along that four-year trajectory, we were always 6 months away. So it was a long road.
2 weeks, Chuck. 2 weeks. Yeah, so that's that's been extremely exciting. It really just talks about the time of where we are. It almost doesn't feel real. And I've said this before. It's like, I can't believe we are where we are, you know, because there's been so much. It hasn't happened so often that it's fine. When it's finally happening, it doesn't feel real. Anyway,
we'll think about it in a different way. How did we get here? We got here with large data sets and compute. And in the fall of 2020, I don't think anyone would have said, oh, well, we got to go buy 200,000 GPU clusters and put them in Texas. And we didn't even design the wings. So let's build another wing. And we got to get these five cooling towers. And they're adapting to the needs of how to get where they're going through these very expensive commitments. You know, and the XAI team, you know, building that data cluster up there for Grok that I have no doubt will somehow be integrated at some point, hopefully to give a conversational interface versus, you know, the little voice interface.
I don't even think they started neural net development by the end of 2020. Right.
Well, you know, Andre had that, you know, the V2 code's going to eat the code kind of a thing.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I don't know how far along they were.
Maybe like
but
a year.
There's no doubt that at least academically, and that's probably why Andre was brought to the team, honestly, was to kick that off. Because, you know, they had gotten rid of Mobileye and they weren't using a purchase solution anymore. They were going in-house and all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think those are very, very interesting things you brought up. The way I see it is I do think teleoperation will be a necessity to start with if it's in any sort of driverless domain where the consumer is renting out the car to the fleet, like allowing it to be. Yes. But I don't see that happening for at least 2 years. I think we're still a couple years away from me being able to add the Cyber Cab to, or whatever car, the Model 3, the Model Y, the Model X, to the fleet without me having to be in there. And then it kind of delivers rides and it'll be available in jurisdictions that approve it. So, and I think one of the things you say is like, hey, I approve to let my car be part of the Tesla fleet from this time to this time. I accept all, whatever. If something goes wrong, I accept some level of risk. The other risk goes to Tesla. If somebody throws up in your car, that's on you. You chose to put it in there. Oh, and by the way, if something goes wrong and the car can't figure it out, you let Tesla access your car to get your car out of harm's way or get it to its destination. I think that's one place where the teleoperators will kick in. And during that time, for the next couple of years, like you said, the car is going to keep collecting pothole data, is a speed limit data, just everything it needs to collect using the 8 cameras for it to minimize the chances of a teleoperator beaming into your car and moving your car somewhere. So that's one way I see it. I think in the meantime, though, and this is where the topic of the joystick comes in, Chuck, because I know how much you love joysticks, my friend. You're Mr. Pilot.
I know how to use one.
You know how to use one. You hate them in cars, though.
I don't hate them in cars. Yeah. I don't see a realistic path. And I did caveat it in a post of two underneath you. Yeah. Anytime soon, I may have even said in this decade. I just don't see... The amount of training I had to have as an Airbus pilot to go from just a yoke, which is a traditional control, to a side joystick, like it exists in the F-16, the F-22, some other fighter aircraft, and the Airbus. Yeah. Not even the Boeing 737 has a side joystick. It's a left brain, right brain, I can't, figure this out kind of a thing. It isn't something I can immediately say that selling to a consumer would work. I do think that some others commented on your post that, having screen input of, I want to go here, just like on an Uber app, you move the pin and then they kind of come over to you with a new pin location. Waymo, kind of the same thing. You missed me, pick me up here now. I think that sort of screen interface is possible. I just don't see giving because there's a lot of things that can go wrong with giving a user control when they don't know how to use it. Specifically in aviation, we get things like PIO, is pilot-induced oscillations, where you over-control. Because you don't understand, how much input you're putting, and then you overdo it, and then you need to go back and redo it, and you create these sinusoidal patterns. Unless the joystick is truly a mouse for the screen, which they don't need because they can use KipCast and touch screens, I just don't see it as something being introduced to consumers. Now, could a joystick control car be introduced into a fleet that is for professional pay drivers? Sure, but I just don't see that as a viable product.
So let me walk you through sort of how I've been thinking about this, and I'd love to sort of like get your thoughts, because there's really three things happening in this world now that Tesla is, we all agree, all three of us at least, or four of us with JD that I've spoken to so far, that Tesla will start offering driverless rides sometime next year, in the next 12 months. Okay. So what does that imply? That implies that, essentially every car that has at least hardware 4 and potentially hardware 3, but definitely a hardware 3 car with an upgraded computer to 3 plus or whatever you want to call it, there will be millions of cars on the road that will drive themselves. If the person would like the car to drive itself, forget adding it to the fleet, forget using it in the robotaxi network. Me, as a person who owns a Tesla that has hardware 4, let's say, starting in the next 12 months, I can probably get in my car and let the car drive me around without me realistically putting in any inputs for safety critical interventions for thousands of miles. So I start from that level set. And I'm like, okay, cool. So in the instance where you have the existing fleet already selling with the 3, the Y, the S, and the X, and the Cybertruck, okay, you already got the steering wheel in there. You already got the pedal in there. You're still going to sell those to people that want that sort of a car, form factor, the fact that it has a steering wheel, pedal, whatever, you're going to keep cranking those out. But as it pertains to the next generation vehicles that Tesla's coming out with, given that their software is going to be at the level where a person realistically won't even have to touch the wheel or steering pedals for thousands of miles, it seems like the steering wheel and pedal sort of mode to me feels like weight and cost that doesn't need to be there, right? And so in my head, I'm like, okay, so if I don't really have to drive, but I still need to sell the car because this, like, okay, and here's the other piece, right? If Tesla is trying to sell 2 million cars per year of the Cybercab starting at the beginning of 2027 with a run rate of 2 million by the end of 2026, which is what Elon Musk pointed to, and they have talking about a more affordable vehicle, blah, blah, blah. I don't know how you get to that level unless you can drive the Cybercab. I just don't see it. I personally do not see how that's possible. There's not enough demand for driverless miles in the world for you to be able to justify 2 million units per year run rate of this car, right? So in my head is like, okay, so if you're not going to be driving it, but you still need to drive it, why not just put something in between the two seats, right? Where the, you know, the passenger and the driver would sit. And, you know, I'm calling it a joystick, but let's just say it's just something, just forward, backward, left, right. So forward, backward, left, whatever, like a shifter, mm-hmm. call it whatever you want, that reinvents how you interface with the vehicle, and you put it right in between the driver and the passenger. And that becomes the way to move the car, especially given that you already have brake by wire, you already have drive by wire, and now you have steer by wire, right? So there's no fundamental changes you have to make to how those things would work. It's all electronically controlled already. So instead of carrying around 20 pounds of weight or whatever it is and $700 of cost, if you have a steering column in the case of a 3 and a Y, let's say, then just throw it on a freaking joystick or something, right? Help me under. And when I look at the regulation, right? And here's the thing, right? When I look at the regulations, there's nothing in the books that says you can't sell a car unless it has a steering wheel pedal. It just has to be approved. It has to be something that that is approved to be safe, you know, and something that ensures that it's always giving control to the driver or whoever is in control. And that's why we have handicap cars. That's why we have input controls for people that are able to interface with a vehicle if they're missing limbs or if they can't reach the pedals or, you know, they can't reach the steering wheel, so they use their feet or whatever, right? There's a bunch of different ways to control a car. And it's all enabled by a software that is now at a point, even today with version 13, that potentially you can go 1,000, 2,000 miles without a safety critical intervention. So that's how I'm thinking about it.
So I liked your straw man. I do think that in order to do something like that, you'd need another driver's license, because we've all been validated to drive with a certain basic set of skills that whether we were 16, 14, 15, or even, you know, older when you got your driver's license, you were evaluated with a set of controls, with a set of blinkers, with an accelerator, with a brake, and all these things that gave you a license in to the state or country you're living in, you're allowed to drive. I don't think you can just throw all that out the window and say, oh, Tesla developed one that's like this. It's nothing like you were qualified on, but you should be able to figure it out. That gap in the regulatory approval of being allowed to do something without like a CDL, commercial driver's license, or something else that's specific to this so you're trained to do it. I think that would be a mitigation or a way to overcome that. I don't think you can just sell them to people based on the way that driver's licenses are approved today. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe one of your followers can comment on this down there and say, no, they can legally do that if they do this and this, or to your point, even get it approved. And I will say that approval word has a very, very strong connotation, because even in aviation, an airline can do whatever they want as long as they can get the FAA to agree to it. And sometimes you have FAA regulators that are very, very helpful to go along with you and say, oh my gosh, you're doing amazing things. And the use of iPads in the cockpit is a very good example of that. There was a lot of resistance in 2013 to put iPads in the flight decks of aviation because they were consumer COTS devices that had internal GPSs and wireless signals that we didn't know if we're going to bring the planes down. It was like, this is ridiculous. But we just made a case. We made mitigations. We made, you know, this is what we're going to do if this happens, even to the extent of we have a lithium battery fire in the flight deck. How are we going to handle it? But ultimately, it won out because it made sense, and we were able to demonstrate and mitigate any of the risks that were allowed to happen. So ultimately, the first American Airlines plane got approved, and then the second and the third, and then now you got precedent, and it's much, much easier for everyone behind you to get that same approval. You would have to go through some sort of approval process like that to do this, I think. But so will a robotaxi fleet or anything. They're going to have to go through this approval process in a region, even if it's just the municipality having control. And this new administration and Elon even having influence on it could fast track some of these things. And it could be a lot easier to do over the next 4 years than perhaps it might have been had things gone differently. So it is always a possibility. Yeah. My second thought on the joystick I felt like when you were describing that argument to me, you were figuring out a way they can use those 2 million cars to that run rate they were advertising. In my mind, they've always just reduced run rate down to demand. If they don't need this many Cybertrucks, they're going to make this many. All those Cybertrucks are not a good example because they're making as many as they can. You know, with Model Y demand went down, you know, they slowed making them down. They, you know, closed the line down here or there. So to me, rather than figuring out a solution to sell all those 2 million, Tesla in the future would just ramp down to the demand and keep the design the same.
Yeah, I think I struggle with that because viewing it from the perspective of Tesla, I don't know why they would be so gung-ho on starting on the upper level of the manufacturing capacity and then throttling down to the number to meet demand from the get-go. Usually it's the opposite. When Tesla launches a vehicle, even on a volume ramp, it seems like they're always, the supply is always behind the demand for at least 3 to 4 years. And then once the market is saturated and they got the product in the market and people are buying it, and then, you know, say we have a recession, interest rates go up, Tesla or Elon pisses off 5% of, you know, a political base or whatever, and they stop buying the car. So I think, and then they adjust, let's say that could be happening, or it definitely does happen based on market dynamics. But I think that that's where I'm really, really stuck because let's say they are going to sell this without any input controls. And it's 100% teleoperated if needed. Otherwise, the human cannot interface with the car under any circumstance. There's nothing, right?
Yeah.
I feel like right now, given the regulatory environment, there is maybe demand for, I don't know, 50,000 of these globally per year maximum, you know, maybe 60,000. If the US can go federal in, say, 2026, maybe you can do 500,000 per year, but it's like per year, right? That's a crazy number. It's like from that point forward, Tesla's going to dump, they want to at least 2 million units of these per year somewhere. So maybe between China and the US, they're seeing there is a path for regulation to be approved to be able to do 2 million of these units per year of just straight up a driverless vehicle with no input controls. But I'm having a very hard time
Seeing
that. If I take Tesla at their word and also assuming the precedents they've set, which is we're always going to hit our initial supply volume targets and then we'll adjust from there once we hit that number. So I wonder how you're processing that.
I don't disagree with you. Obviously, you've got some good numbers there too. Obviously, they believe in
they're not solution. Good, Chuck. They're just numbers.
You're okay. Either way, they're going to the plan, and they haven't deviated from the plan yet with that kind of a run rate, right? And obviously, in my opinion, robotaxis are not going to replace both of my cars, but it might make me go from a 2-car family to a 1-car family. Right. And I think globally, with exception of large cities like New York, where people don't even own cars today, it would completely erode the yellow cab and the Uber market, perhaps, you know, unless Uber comes online and they get a fleet of these. But the yellow cab with the old medallions, those guys ought to look out because these cars you're talking about are right after their jobs. In municipalities, you know, dropping off on the side of the road. But, you know, you're not going to get somebody that has to tow his cows, you know, a couple hundred miles on the weekend to just go robotaxi only, right? There's a certain amount of vehicles. Now, he may own a Cybertruck and do that, but a Cybertruck and a robocab to get into town to go buy groceries is probably the scenario there. So, you know, how they came up with 2 million run rate, obviously it is very ambitious. And it may be your point of some sort of controls to make this the Model 2, whatever we're calling it these days, to say this is the form factor with the unbox process that we're going to develop a smaller car. And maybe that 2 million includes the run rate of that, which is very easy to imagine. They would need those numbers if they could get the price point down to that. So, that's kind of where I am on it. I do think that, you know, getting people into a robotaxi, think about the difficulty, you know, we're having people get into Waymos. We have to cross this threshold. Everybody doesn't get it all at once. Price will drive it, the availability of it. But do you remember the first time you downloaded the Uber app? I mean, you're like, oh, wait, there's a new way of doing this now. And oh, it'll come get me. But you were probably a very small group that even knew Uber existed. And then you told your friends and they told their friends. And the next thing you know, about a year later, maybe 15% more of your friends even knew what Uber was. But now we're 10, 15 years into that business model and it's ubiquitous globally. So that ramp is word of mouth, trust it, try it. Arguably, Waymo is kind of cracking it for us a little bit because there's a small demographic that have actually taken a driverless ride now. And maybe it'll be an easier step to get into a Tesla robotaxi.
So that's an interesting point, because I think the reason why Waymo hasn't taken off is because it's too damn expensive and it doesn't get you to the location nearly as quick as it should. I think it's like the value proposition doesn't align with the what the service should be. And I think that's going to be Tesla's differentiator, is that because you don't have all that software suite or that hardware suite, because you're able to crank millions of units per year, you're starting to build that capacity into your manufacturing line to bring the cost down per unit of these things to 20,000 or less, right?
Yeah.
And then once you do that, then you can offer a fare 20, 30, 40, 50% cheaper than Uber for the same exact miles, or even potentially even less, because Uber's problem is that they're supply limited based on how many drivers are available to be added to their network. Tesla has basically the bot problem with labor for the robotaxi network, which is they're only supply limited by how many cars they can manufacture and how many cars they can make available in each area. So then the biggest driver of the adoption for this technology, which in my opinion is going to be price and convenience, right? Like, there's going to be a number where people are going to be like, man, I kind of don't trust driverless cars too much, but Uber's trying to charge me $100 to get to the airport, and this Tesla robotaxi is like 30.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll take the risk.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Go ahead, Hans.
Yeah. I think that goes back to one of the things that Dave Lee always says about, you know, when you aren't trying to cross the chasm and break into the market with a new product, it really does need to be 10x better on some important dimension. Yeah. And currently Waymo is, you know, like, is Waymo better than just getting an Uber?
No.
Like, there's just no driver there. So it's the same service.
Privacy and comfort.
Service for the same price. And so privacy and comfort a little bit, but that's like a premium luxury and, you know, concern. That's not the factor that, you know, 80% of consumers are going to make the purchasing decision on. And so it's like, it's a head-to-head competitor against Uber that already has the mind share, the market share, the awareness, all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to capture that back from a player like Uber unless you have something that really sets you apart and puts you ahead. And, you know, that's where the pricing power that Tesla will be that thing that Waymo doesn't have. So, you know, if it's half as much even to begin with, that is, you know, that's not 10 times better in pricing, but that is a 10 times reason, like 10 times more people are going to use you if you're half the price. And that's that vector that they can use to break the market open.
Yeah, I hope you didn't misunderstand me thinking I was thinking Waymo is the way to go. The point I was trying to make is that Waymo is breaking the ice with consumers of even possibly getting in a car without a driver.
Agreed 100%.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. The other thing, and to your point about, am I ready to get into a car without a driver? Oh, it's got to be a lot cheaper. Don't forget there's an enormous market that has been cracked with companies like DoorDash and Instacart and all these other companies that don't even need to put a human in a car to have the service not need a driver any longer. You know, if the robotaxis are pulling up to the fast food and they're, you know, essentially just dumping it off and it's sending your house, that delivery driver, of course, it's a job, you know, and somebody, kids have been doing that in high school for years. That doesn't even have a human at risk. And obviously this market should probably be cost effective even in that realm, if not there first. So I don't think that this is going to have a problem once they achieve the regulatory approval. It will probably accelerate hyperbolically, to use that word again, because of Elon and because of its you know notoriety that he is going to be able to give this. It's not just going to creep into the market. It's going to go kaboom when it does. And the cars are cool and the screen's nice. And I wanted to come back to the point on the joystick thing, to your point of they got to do something like this. And I don't disagree that they could be thinking along these lines, but I keep sitting in front of Thanksgiving conversations again with family and stuff like that, having conversations and teaching them what ChatGPT is now and how conversational it can be when you go to voice mode. And I'm like, you know, okay, let's stop typing. Let's just talk to this thing. And then I'm teaching, you know, people how to use words like, you know, say this in an angry voice. And, you know, be very thoughtful and, you know, apolitical when you answer this in this way. If they're spending this much effort in grok, the interface to the car might not even need to be a joystick as much as a conversation with the computer. You know, hey, back up here. You know, hey, you missed the turn back there, just like you would a cabbie, right? Maybe we don't need that joystick. Maybe we can use this with a computer and the conversation, which I think is going to be the new computer input. You know, the days of Siri, Alexa, and, you know, hey, Google or whatever are rapidly going to go away as Whoa. These LLMs get integrated into our IoT devices to where they're just everywhere. And instead of just saying, hey, set a timer, and that's the only thing it's good for, you're going to be able to have a talk with a friend, you know, and even anthropomorphize it a little bit. And next thing you realize, you're saying thank you and please to a machine, which we're already doing in many respects if you play with these LLMs a little bit.
Yeah. So that's such a cool thing to think about. I think when I think through that, so that it would be still in a fully autonomous version of this, or are you viewing that as the input for a car that would meet today's regulations for a human to be able to take over the car?
My point is just like, I don't think you're going to need a mouse and a computer for very much longer either. I'm just saying, I don't think you need that joystick thing that's very complicated that you're thinking about. And maybe the path, if they did want to give the human control, would be the same control they're going to give it already, where from your robotaxi, you know, instead of hitting a hurry button, you're saying, hey, I'm in a hurry. And next thing you know, it goes into hurry mode, like we have a speed profile today. Maybe the control you're talking about is voice control. You know, instead of a joystick control. And when you go to voice control versus a joystick or a manual input control, you're taking the human's input that I was talking about earlier about over controlling out of the loop. And now you're just giving the command to the computer, much like Ashok has shown, you know, that they've already done in simulation, you know, turn left ahead. And then their model will, you know, create a video that turns left out of thin air with their video model. So,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think it's such a fascinating conversation. It's so, I don't understand what they're trying to do with this fucking CyberCab. I don't get it. I'm so confused. And
they're just trying to make it first. And then once they make it, they're going to try to make it work.
Chuck, I live in La La Land. I'm trying to figure out what the hell's going on.
believe me, I think what's going on is what they said. We're already offering driverless rides in a small city in California, AKA Palo Alto, where their employees are already getting picked up and dropped off. They're doing it, guaranteed. Yeah. I don't know if you know anybody that's taken one. I don't, but they mentioned that they're already running the app. So that's where they're going with it. And they're refining all the details, and then they're going to cross the regulatory hurdles. And that is honestly going to go fast after January.
So I think that's it. Go ahead, Hans. Go ahead, please.
I think the other element to what Chuck is saying is that while I'm not saying that the conversation that we've had around joysticks and cybercabs, like it's possible that they could make a cybercab looking vehicle on the existing 3NY lines. It would obviously be made a little bit differently than the cybercab will be made eventually. I do think the more likely scenario is that the new vehicles that get unveiled in the beginning of next year are modified versions of the 3NY that are not all the way to a cybercab look. And I think it is probably still more likely that they do have steering wheel and pedals, just because I don't know that we're quite to the level of being able to transition to something like a joystick. But that those new vehicles are going to have parts that eventually will be made in the CyberCab, and so that they will actually help to prime the pump, so to speak, on the supply chain for the CyberCab.
Yeah. Well, if they're going to release a car with a joystick, in my opinion, it's going to be the Roadster. And that would be the one to do it. They've already said it should fly. So, you know, I don't know. And to me, that feels like the place to do it if you're going to try it first, not a mass-produced vehicle. But, God, wouldn't that be fun? You know, they'd sell another bunch of them if they told people that.
They should give you the first one for free just because you're a pilot. What do you think about that? Yeah. Can we make that happen? Yeah. If the Roadster flies, Chuck gets one for free, and he'll be the first one, okay? Let's make it happen. Let's get it for him.
We need to charge Ben Sullins one of his Roadster techs and give it to Chuck.
That's right. Golly, amazing how many people got those, and they're just still waiting. It's really also amazing how much money people put down for the car that still isn't here. Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of change. Maybe not for the people that put that money down, but yeah.
$250 ain't nothing. $250 is a lot.
For almost everybody, right?
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot of Tesla shares for sure.
You're struggling on subject here. I want to talk about the ADAS drivers in the streets and what's been going on and things like that that I keep looking out on. You know, I've got my camera set up, as I've talked to you guys before. I've got, you know, a real video feed. I'm capturing images of every car. And I've got an AI script I wrote that's actually pulling out every vehicle and identifying Cybertruck Model 3, Model Y, or Model S. And it's putting those in different categories. And then I go through each of those pictures every day. And I look for the vehicles I've seen before, first of all. And then I look for patterns like, oh, he's back 20 minutes later, oh, 20 minutes later, 20 minutes later. Okay, they're doing the loop or they're doing some QA testing. And they were here just a few days ago, Cybertruck was driving, the Model Y was driving, and it was a Model Y that had the old silver hubcap. So it could have been a Hardware 3 Model Y, and, you know, without getting up close and seeing the Terminator eye in the camera, there's just no way for me to see at a long range what type of car it is. That just means they're continuing to work. So here we've got this enormous release. We got a holiday update that's already got release notes out there and it's being dropped on the 44 build. There's more coming. I don't know if it's 13.3 or if it's a 12.5.6.6 for the Cybertruck or something to get the Cybertruck on the 12.5.6 build, because Cybertruck is falling a little bit behind, although it's doing relatively well. It's such a different vehicle having FSD than it was for the whatever 6 or 8 months we didn't have anything. And then the Hardware 3 question, right? You know what? If that was a Hardware 3 car, a lot of people are kind of losing hope, that we're being left behind. And while I do think you are being left behind, the hope Thanks. Of an upgrade or a path to being made whole, it would definitely end up in some sort of litigation if they just forgot everything. So they can't really do that. But I just don't think, now that I've seen, you know, Neo get his jujitsu brain, now that I saw my Model Y get its AI 4 brain with 13.2, I just don't see Hardware 3 having that clairvoyance, without distillation, without shrinking the model down, without shrinking the parameters and all the things that come along with that, which probably just mean a little less performance. There's a little bit of discussion on the AI drivers that are out there, and maybe some more updates we could be getting imminently.
Yeah, I think I've been pretty vocal about my concerns around Hardware 3 not being able to become a supervised / robotaxi long term, because of some of the verbiage that was coming out of Tesla and Elon and how they were framing certain things. But all of that anxiety for me went away once Elon said, if we can't get it done, we'll just upgrade the computer. And I'm like, okay, fine. At some point, because if you really think about it, how much money would Tesla be leaving on the table if they had, 4 million, whatever the number is, 4 million Hardware 3 cars that would not be able to operate as robotaxi and generate Tesla $20,000 to $30,000 a year in its cut or whatever that number is, right? It would be so silly to have billions of dollars in essentially assets just sitting there doing nothing, essentially, right? Relatively speaking.
The length of time to get to that upgrade, I think, is going to be another point of frustration for people if that's what they're hanging their hat on. The point that they give up, and, to Elon's point, if we can't do it, we'll upgrade the computer. You know, he may have a 5-year timeline. We're going to try really hard to make it work. And that 5-year timeline may not be copacetic to folks that own it now, right? So I think it may be a combination of that promise and a very aggressive upgrade path that just incentivizes you to, hey, for your FSD transfer, I don't know. I don't think they can do any of that, though, until they've proven unsupervised. Otherwise, they're giving upgrades to something that still hasn't even proven and gotten approved yet. Yeah. So I think the timing of that is still waiting on something that hasn't happened.
I definitely have a little bit of a different view on Hardware 3's future than most people, it seems like. And, even this is a conversation that Farzad and I have gone back and forth on. But, if you go back, everyone who's saying that Hardware 3 can't do what the new version 13 is able to do today, almost every time I hear that argument, it's around someone saying it's all about the size of the model. The number of parameters is too much. And therefore, just like based on parameter count alone, we can't do that. And I point those people to the fact that a 405B parameter model from 2022 from any of the big companies is a less performant, lower quality model than a 70 billion parameter count model that's produced today. And so we know the fact that if you just give it time, there, like, there's so many different things that you can improve the performance of a neural net based on. And parameter count is one of like five different vectors that you can improve performance on. And so, you know, you can have higher quality data, you can have more training time, you can have more computers for the same amount of training time. And the fact that we're growing our training cluster, like, I have very little doubt that if at the end, you know, somewhere in the middle of 2020, we'll just pose a hypothetical scenario that version 13 really works incredibly well on hardware for cars in the second half of 2025. They have rolled out unsupervised and like, okay, now we need to do something to address hardware 3. That I think their ability to run a fresh run of training that's only based on hardware 3 data, but it's an improved curated data set with their 100 plus thousand new GPUs in their Cortex cluster, that they'll be able to bang out a model that they can squish down and put on hardware 3 in a couple of months. Yeah. Now, they're not going to want to do that every time they release a new model to hardware 4 or AI 4 computers. But so it'll be a slower cadence that hardware 3 gets updated on. And it will also be, you know, like I said, not slower, it'll be behind, and then it won't be as often. But I think that they can absolutely roll out great, you know, updates that will probably satisfy the conditions that, you know, are set forth in the contract of what it is that you purchased. Is that going to be as good as the AI 4 version of the software? No, probably not. But it's going to be like, you know, if you want that, you need to buy the new car, I guess. So
yeah,
that's the future that I think is the most likely future.
I agree with your point about we don't know the future of the capability of quantization and distillation of these models. And it looks like everything, just like Moore's Law went this way, it looks like the compute required to get the same level of performance should go down with tighter models based on tighter data sets to get the weights you want, to get the behavior you want. But what I don't think you can solve is the eyeballs. 1.2 megapixel cameras are from the 80s. I mean, I want 50 megapixel cameras, you know, right now, but all I got's five, because that equals the world I'm seeing. My eyeballs, even though they're starting to deteriorate at my age, are like 50 megapixels. If there's some people have different mathematicals, what the resolution of the human eye is. So, and then you say, well, they can upgrade the cameras. Well, okay. Upgrading the camera doesn't solve the problem if you hadn't solved the bandwidth. Because if you've ever tried to render a video on a machine that didn't handle 4K video, it just crawled because it just hadn't the bandwidth and the memory to handle that much throughput. So you'd have to upgrade the computer, you have to upgrade the bandwidth, and you have to upgrade the cameras if you had a model that did perform on the same size hard drive that the Model 3 has, or the Hardware 3 has today. So I do think they could solve that one, but I don't think it would do them any good without upgrading the bandwidth and the cameras to match the higher-end models. Now, maybe I'm wrong there, but I do believe that they will get smaller and smaller on the model with fewer parameters over time. But right now, it feels like we're still going on the upscale with the way they're building these data clusters.
Yeah. I think we're very excited to bring back James Dama on the channel, hopefully in the next couple of weeks here. He's just been slammed, and of course, we don't want to rush him back, but we should be able to talk to him here soonish, hopefully before Christmas, if not after, great. Obviously.
We have to ask him about the dinner that he, JD, and I had in San Francisco on my last trip out there. Just the three of us. Did we geek out for about 2.5 hours at this restaurant?
Oh my God.
Just the three of us. And it was a great time.
That must have been so fun. Yeah. We're and it seems like what's interesting about this whole discussion is like, now we're at the point where every time, I told this to JD too, is like, you know, our conversations with JD seemed farther apart. Because it was, you know, we started talking with them maybe like a year and a half ago, it feels like. But then now it feels like there's a major release that's coming through. It's accelerating. So now we're like, hey, JD, can you come back so we can talk about this? Because it seems like something big has happened. Hey, JD, can you come back? It seems like something big has happened, right? And I think with this one, it's super exciting because this is the branch that's going to get us to unsupervised at some point, right? So that's what's very interesting. Now, maybe before we wrap this up, I want to be respectful of your time, Chuck. I think the one thing that we talked about previously was we think unsupervised robotaxi rides somewhere. you know, or some sort of robo taxi fare with maybe somebody, a supervised person in the car, where Tesla's going to be able to collect money from a robo taxi ride by the end of next year sometime. So how are you viewing unsupervised FSD for owners that don't want to add the car to the fleet, but want to get in their car and just let the car drive them from point A to point B? How are you viewing the timeline for that?
As long as I'm in the seat, we're almost there. But if you're saying I'm getting the back seat, I still can't see that yet.
In the seat, in the driver's seat.
In the driver's seat. As long as they have me as the ultimate regulatory override of if something goes wrong, you're still responsible. Or if they took responsibility with a higher level four and or level three and said, we'll just notify you when you need to pay attention and take over, like with a critical disengagement or something like that. They could do that fairly soon. But putting me in the back seat, I have no ability of taking over if something goes wrong. I can't see that time horizon yet or that singularity yet. So it's just a little bit beyond my horizon. I do believe they're on a road to do it. But to me, that may be AI5 hardware. I just don't know. But the software is getting so good. If they constrain the domain again, it really can go in so many places. The world's a big place. I just don't think they can say anywhere, anytime, any place and get approval for that. I mean, it's hard to get those kind of approvals, right? You know, usually you're a city or a town or an area, and that's probably what they're going to do. And they'll get some town that'll say, yeah, you can do this wherever you want as long as Tesla takes ownership. And don't forget, this may be governed by the liability owners, right? You know, what insurance company, what are the rates? You know, are your rates going to go up if you do this? And maybe the owners will never do it because the rates will quadruple. So it's got to be on Tesla. And those dynamics in the actuary tables could drive that formula for us without us just wanting to do it. Comes back to Tesla insurance. Let's come back to all that entire synergy, right? You know, a Tesla insured car may have no problem doing this, but you know, a Geico or a USAA insured car may be no way, no how are we going to let you do that with your car?
So, I always wonder if maybe they'll only enable unsupervised driving, even if you're in the driver's seat, if you have Tesla insurance. I wonder if that's a thing.
Well, it's definitely a path because that would, well, Tesla, it wouldn't be only if you have Tesla insurance, but Tesla insurance may be the only one willing to insure you in that scenario.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Maybe they would say with insurance, yet there's only one person that's willing to insure you in that yet, at least early on.
Yeah.
They would have to expand where they cover because Tesla insurance is not available in that many places yet.
I still don't have it in Florida. It was almost here many, many years ago, to at least 2 years ago now. It was almost here and it must have gotten tied up somewhere.
Yeah.
And maybe that was political too. I don't know. It could have been something going on with the state at that time and they just didn't want to be that state yet.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some weirdness going on there. I think the unsupervised FSD with a driver ultimately being responsible for the vehicle, I think that unlock is very underrated because the value proposition of a car now has, even though you're not adding it to the fleet, even though ultimately you're responsible, but you don't really have to pay attention. You don't have to pay attention at all unless the car needs you to pay attention. Yeah. I think that value proposition unlock is really, really large because with everyone that I speak to that could potentially like that are hesitant to adopt the technology, but will be willing if they just don't have to pay attention. That's a lot of people because what's the function there? You gain back time. Even with supervised self-driving, you're still spending time driving, which in this case is really supervising. But being ultimately responsible to take over something were to go wrong. In an unsupervised scenario, you do get back time. Maybe you can't take a nap. Maybe you can't have a full meal in front of the steering wheel, but you can be on your phone. You can just not pay attention. You can just have a full-blown conversation. Your mental capacity opens up tremendously, and it does win you back time. And I think that is when from a realization perspective by the public, from a market perspective, I don't want to turn this into a financial discussion, but there does seem to be a very profound unlock once Tesla says, yeah, you have to be in the driver's seat, but you don't have to pay attention, right? Yeah. Unless we tell you to.
Yeah.
I don't know if you feel the same way, but
I absolutely do. And in aviation, we even have a term where we talk about that time you get back, and it allows you to elevate yourself above the systems you're required to control. We typically have three levels of automation that we refer to. You know, first level automation is, you know, you're flying your trajectory forward and back, and you're flying the speed with their throttles, and you're in control of the airplane. You're manually flying it. And when you're doing that, your airspeed, your altitude, and everything you have to pay attention to is so scope locked, you know, to the old, did you see the gorilla walk across the basketball floor? You didn't even see it because you were so focused on, you know, what you're paying attention to. But then you lower the level of increase the level of automation to give yourself more supervisory control. You engage the autopilot. So now it's flying the path for you. You engage the auto throttle. So now it's managing speed for you. Now you're a supervisor in the aircraft, but you're still responsible for making sure you're on the right altitude, you're on the right airspeed, and you're making the trajectory. It's still your responsibility, but you're able to see everything else. Oh, wait, that oil pressure's a little higher. Oh, you know what? Look at those clouds over there. The weather's coming up. We're going to, you know, be going that direction soon. You see more when you are able to take off those lower tasks. So not only can you maybe read or tweet or do whatever on your phone, if you are in charge of the vehicle, it allows you to be safer, see more. You know, you might see that turkey on the side of the road that you would have never have seen because you're looking at the semi in front of you that might hit the brakes any second. And I already feel that today on the highway, as I'm sure you guys do with the current state of autopilot.
100%.
When you're on the autopilot, you just see so much more, both on the vehicle and outside the vehicle.
I miss it so much when I don't have it in a car. It is, it's become a absolute must for me, for my car, any car that I own, to have FSD, period.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people come over all the time when they want to think about getting a Cybertruck or see something, or they want to do the turn or something like that. And, you know, a lot of people say, hey, you know, why do you love Tesla so much? And I'm like, first of all, it's a computer, and I'm kind of a technical person, so I wanted the ability of kind of hacking the computer a little bit and playing with it and learning how it works and taking it apart. Doing things like my HDMI extract and stuff like that. They were fun projects. But ultimately, when I answer that question now, I'm like, this is just an EV. It's a great EV, but anybody can make an EV. It's about the software. And, you know, if you're going to go think about any other EV, that's fine. You know, make sure you get your charging thought out, because, you know, if you're not one of the companies that's coming on the supercharger network, that's going to be your biggest critical path. But it's the software. It is so much further ahead. And on a different level, you know, in the way they're vertically integrated with things like Grok and XAI, there's no end to it. And even the supercharging network was so brilliant in its time and how it created that vertical stovepipe and that ecosystem. Safety ratings are, of course, important, but I think anyone can catch up there if they wanted, right? They just have to spend the money to make their car safer. You know, the battery technology is good, but it feels like it's kind of a commodity. You get a little bit better management systems. But this software, not only the FSD software, but the emergency braking, the other features with seatbelt tensioning, and the stuff they just continue to iterate on is their gold stuff. So when people call me and say, should I get a Tesla? I try to explain it to them. It's about the software, not the EV or the brand. So it's about, it is about the brand, but it's the software that this brand is making.
For sure. Hans, did you want to throw something in before we give Chuck back his time talking about
that? Yeah. Well, I think that I 100% agree on the importance of that unsupervised piece. And I think that really is one of those big step change moments. You know, a lot of people will call those ChatGPT moments now. But I think that there's still another important milestone that's kind of in between here and there that I think we're potentially right on the edge of achieving. And that's the fact that really FSD is still an early adopter feature, even within Tesla drivers. That it's not, it, we haven't really reached the point where FSD supervised is a mass adopted software product for the Tesla fleet. And I think that version 13 is the, you know, is potentially the thing that gets us over that hump. That we've had so many people who even have had now the free trials and they're like, yeah, I like it, but I don't know that the value is really there. And I think the more that it passes the wife tests, like, and not just passes them, but passes them with flying colors, and that every driver really feels comfortable using the system, then all of a sudden you can say, okay, we're going to do that. And we're going to lower the subscription rate for supervised down to $50 a month. Like, you get to the point there where you finally penetrate that part of the bell curve and say, okay, now we've got mainstream adoption within, you know, the Tesla fleet of FSD supervised. And that is the thing that really flips the switch on Tesla from being a company whose business model is dependent on hardware sales to one that's dependent on software sales.
Yeah. Your point, I thought earlier I wanted to mention this. I'm glad you said the ChatGPT moment, because I'm actually starting to get to the point where I don't think we're going to have a ChatGPT moment. And it's not because there isn't going to be an epiphany of what this car can do like we realized when we all downloaded ChatGPT. It's because everyone can't go drive FSD when they hear about it. You know, we all heard about ChatGPT and went and downloaded the app for free and didn't even pay $20 a month. We just played with it, right? I don't know that we're going to get that kind of realization unless we get butts in seats, right? You know, hearing about it on the news or hearing a video talk about it is not the same thing. That's just like hearing about this thing called ChatGPT, but never even downloading the app, right? The ChatGPT moment happens after you download the app, after you realize what it could actually do for you in your use case. And then you build upon that and say, this is how this is going to fit into my life. And the only way I think we could have the equivalent is to get butts in seats. And maybe robotaxi is that. I don't think it's FSD with cars that people have to buy, you know, because you just can't drive enough friends around to get that kind of market penetration. We are in a bubble here with our own little ChatGPT moment as we're exploding. But that's probably no different than OpenAI when they had GPT-4 before they could release it. They knew what was coming, but nobody knew about it in the world yet until they could actually use it themselves.
My pushback to that is that the advent of self-driving is very viral. Is seeing a car drive itself in all these crazy situations that it hasn't done before, especially in the world that we live in today where social media dominates most of people's consumption of media and information. Yeah. I think, you know, V13 going out, and let's say it's supervisor on supervisor or whatever, the amount of content that will be generated from sources that would traditionally not generate that content and create this flood of new media that comes through of just everyone's cars just driving themselves in the Costco parking lot in Manhattan. You know, how viral is a video of a person sort of, you know, sipping on a coffee while the car is doing some insane maneuvers in Manhattan, as an example?
Yeah, and the virality of it is real. But the moment happens when you use it yourself and the light bulb goes off.
That's fair.
So that's just like, yeah, you know, somebody talking about Tesla every single day, not even owning a Tesla, and saying, whoa, this stuff is great. I'm like, well, how do you know? You know, you know what I mean? You can't say it unless you own it or have driven one with a friend. So I just think that you have to experience it. You can hear about it. You can watch a Super Bowl ad about it. But to have the ChatGPT moment, I think you have to do it. I don't discount the virality. We'll sell a lot of cars and people want to get in. But the price of entry isn't a free app on the internet to try. The price of entry is a Tesla.
Yeah. I think the scale and magnitude of the adoption will definitely be slower than ChatGPT by a factor of 100. Yeah. 100% agree.
But the robotaxi driving around presents that opportunity without any upfront costs, right? So if we're waiting on that unsupervised with unsupervised vehicles, the market penetration and the ChatGPT moments can happen all at once, I think.
That's true. Yeah. Every Uber rider could theoretically, if you have the regulatory approval and you have the robotaxis available in those jurisdictions, theoretically it could take a couple weekends before a critical mass of Uber riders try out Tesla because they have a, you know, their prices are 30 to 50% cheaper and they're like, what the hell? What the hell just happened? Why am I riding with Uber? I get a car all to myself. I can control the temperature and the music. I'm chilling. I'm hanging out. It's comfortable. It's got cool seats. And look at how cool I look. And look at my TikTok. I can now make a cool TikTok and put it online, or a cool, you know, post or whatever, and put it online, or a YouTube video. Yeah, man. What an exciting time. 2025.
The word will spread.
Yeah, it feels crazy. Chuck, last word for you, my friend. Any last parting words for the audience?
No, first of all, thanks for having me on. You guys are great to talk with. I learn things just talking out loud, even if it's things I say and say with you guys. We all kind of cogitate together and come up with new conclusions about where we're going. You got to do it again. You know, V13, it's real. I hope it goes wide, and I don't know why it hasn't. So it should probably go wide on 13.3, like they originally stated, maybe here on a point release in the next few days.
Yeah, we'll definitely get you back, Chuck. Make sure you go check him out. Chuck Cook on YouTube, at Chazman on X. Thank you so much, my friend. We'll see you soon.
All right. See you guys. Bye-bye.
All right. Recording.